Governor Branstad just announced a new wrongful conviction division. The state will work with the Innocence Project. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we find out all about the Innocence Project, a national organization dedicated to exonerating wrongfully convicted individuals through DNA testing. It also works to reform the criminal justice system to prevent future injustice. We'll talk with its co-founder, Peter Neufeld, also Brian Farrell, president of the Innocence Project of Iowa, and state public defender Adam Gregg. How and why are people wrongly convicted? We find out first this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Governor Branstad just announced a new wrongful conviction division in the Office of the State Public Defender. The state will work with the Innocence Project. That's a national organization dedicated to exonerating wrongfully convicted individuals through DNA testing and reforming the criminal justice system to prevent future injustice. The governor says investigators know how unreliable certain types of evidence can be.
We also know that in a system operated by humans, mistakes can be made, including wrongful conviction.
And so this hour, we want to explore the origins and the work of the Innocence Project with one of its co-founders. Peter Neufeld is with us in our Des Moines studio. Peter, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
Also, Brian Farrell with us in our Iowa City studio. He's a lecturer at the University of Iowa College of Law and president of the Innocence Project of Iowa. Brian, welcome back.
Thanks, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here.
And in Des Moines, Adam Gregg, a state public defender. Adam, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on.
I want to have some more details about the governor's move here, this new wrongful conviction division, in just a moment. But first, I want to make sure we have a good handle on what the Innocence Project is. Peter, why was it, when was it founded?
We started the Innocence Project about 25 years ago, just about the same time that DNA made its beginnings in the United States criminal justice system. And we thought at that moment that DNA, because it was so exquisitely sensitive and so specific, that you could look at a lot of old cases where people were tried based on other kinds of evidence like eyewitnesses or alleged confessions. And if the biology still existed, you could go back and test the hypothesis of innocence.
To date, I understand over 333 DNA exonerations by the Innocence Project. Can you recall maybe an early case where the DNA, the value of DNA in this context was really proven quite early?
Well, just about our first case was a case down in Alexandria, Virginia, where a young man had been convicted of rape. It was a cross-racial case. And we thought there was a chance that the victim had made a misidentification. And when she was taken to the hospital, a rape kit was prepared. So all the biology had been well maintained, and we finally got a court order after the gentleman had been in for a number of years to do DNA testing, and he was excluded as the source of the semen. And I'll never forget it because I got a call from the governor. There was no law to let people out. I got a call from Governor Wilder of Virginia saying that my client was going to be exonerated. And I had never spoken to his mother, who was a very large woman who worked for the Postal Service. And I flew down to this small rural airport in Virginia. And all of a sudden, this very large woman came bounding across the tarmac. And your viewers don't know me, but I'm 6'3 and I weigh 215. And she lifted me off the pavement like I was a feather and gave me a bear hug. And then we went off to get her son out of prison and walk him into daylight. And I remember that event as if it was yesterday.
It must have been a great feeling.
It was.
and this has started to sort of a as this became clear, we are seeing our criminal justice system in a different way, Peter, that we're seeing wrongful convictions are not the rarity we had hoped they were.
Well, we've had 330 wrongful convictions where people were exonerated by DNA. And then there's another project called the Registry, which is based at the University of Michigan and Northwestern University. And they've looked at non-DNA exonerations in the last 25 years, and they've counted over 1,600. So it is not that much of a rarity. It happens with alarming frequency. And I think everybody in this country now, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, a conservative or a liberal, realize that our criminal justice system is more vulnerable than we once thought it was.
Peter Neufeld is with us. He's co-founder of the Innocence Project. If you'd like to join our conversation, your questions about wrongful convictions and the work of the Innocence Project, we welcome them this hour. Peter will be with us the entire noon hour. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Adam Gregg, State Public Defender, tell us more about the division that is being created of the State Public Defender's Office. Governor announcing that just this week, the new Wrongful Conviction Division.
Yes, well, first of all, let me just say I feel kind of sheepish sitting here talking about innocence work next to Peter Neufeld, who's like the godfather of this type of effort. And it's kind of like talking about pitching a baseball with Cy Young looking over your shoulder.
Adam, in New York, if you call somebody like the godfather, that's an insult. You get me arrested. Go ahead.
Well, there are a lot of things that started this fire here in Iowa, a lot of little sparks. Just from me and my leadership in the State Public Defender's Office, my leadership team there, talking about an innocence effort and what we could do to make things better here in Iowa as a state public defender. I had read the book The Innocent Man by John Grisham, listened to the Serial podcast. I'd read Actual Innocence by the man sitting next to me, Peter Neufeld, and really got interested in this concept of wrongful convictions happening throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. And to date, there are no wrongful convictions in Iowa, or have there been those proven?
Well, Ben, it depends on how you measure that. Under the DNA, the Innocence Project's list of DNA exonerations, there have not been any DNA exonerations in Iowa. There have been in a number of our neighbors, Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska. Under the University of Michigan's National Registry of Exonerations, which includes non-DNA, there are 12 exonerations in Iowa of the 1,600 that Peter mentioned.
Give me an example of a non-DNA exoneration.
Well, let's just say, for example, a witness recants or something like that. That would be
a false confession.
Right, right.
Something like that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Governor said that investigators were trained by FBI agents who've now been shown to have given flawed testimony. So that's a reason this division is being set up as well, Adam?
Well, yeah, that was one of the key drivers of this. This past spring, the FBI and the Innocence Project announced the results of their joint review of a number of federal cases that involved hair analysis and testimony by FBI agents. And what they found is in about 95% of the cases that they reviewed, FBI agents gave testimony which was seriously flawed in that it overstated the statistical significance of matches of hairs when viewed under a microscope. Mm-hmm. The problem that presented for Iowa is that those same FBI agents trained Division of Criminal Investigation agents in those same methods. And so the question naturally arises, well, did those same mistakes occur in Iowa?
Of course.
What we really felt like, and I think what the governor feels like, is if there's anybody who's well-positioned to systematically review those cases, it's the state public defender. So we set out to actually partner with our Division of Criminal Investigation to jointly identify any cases where hair comparison analysis was used. And that's one of the things I want to make sure that your listeners understand is this is not about pointing fingers at law enforcement. This is not about second-guessing anybody. I think everybody has an interest in getting it right. DCI has shown that by partnering with us, and we're going to do everything we can to review these cases and make sure that as a state we get it right.
How many cases do you see now under review in Iowa?
So far, the Division of Criminal Investigation has provided us with about 100 case files of cases that involved some level of hair analysis. Now, that's not to say that there's going to be litigation justified in all 100 of those, but that'll be the baseline. What we'll do is our new wrongful conviction division is partnering with Brian's Innocence Project of Iowa and the Midwest Innocence Project, which is based in Kansas City but covers Iowa, and we'll jointly review those cases. We'll pull the transcripts and see exactly what testimony was given in those cases. If we find those types of errors, we'll then go to a second level of review to determine whether or not that testimony was material in that case.
Mm-hmm.
If it was, if we get through those two levels of screening, then we'll examine the opportunity to seek post-conviction relief in court.
You said about 100 cases under review. Give us the crimes that they're convicted of.
Oh, it can be anything from rape, murder, kidnapping. What we're talking about are really the most serious crimes.
Mm-hmm.
What we requested from the Division of Criminal Investigation is any case files for anybody who's currently incarcerated and was convicted between 1980 and 2000.
So these people have certainly been sitting in prison potentially years, perhaps decades?
Absolutely. These cases are likely to be from the mid-80s, early 90s. And so, you know, that period of time before DNA testing had really spread all across the country, and we were using these previous methods like hair analysis.
Adam, how likely do you think of these 100-odd cases will there be an exoneration? Would you put your money on that?
I would. There is going to come a day when we're going to walk somebody out of prison who was wrongfully convicted of a crime and spent time in prison for something that they didn't do. And all I need to do to sort of prove that up is to point to those statistics that I mentioned earlier. Of the 330 DNA exonerations, many of them came from our neighboring states, mm-hmm. Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska. I'm not so naive to think that those same mistakes couldn't have happened here in Iowa.
Ben, one other comment,
Peter,
if
Peter
I may.
Neufeld, of course, yes.
Sure. Of the 330 DNA exonerations, 74 of those cases, the people were convicted based on hair evidence, okay? And in half those cases, we were able to not only free the innocent, but we were able to identify the real perpetrator. And the real perpetrator invariably during that hiatus committed other serious violent crimes. So going back and looking at these cases is not just about trying to exonerate innocent people. It becomes a matter of public safety because you really want to identify the really bad folks who are out there committing serious violent crimes.
Peter Neufeld, co-founder of the Innocence Project, along with State Public Defender Adam Gregg, talking with us this hour. Also, Brian Farrell with us, lecturer at the University of Iowa College of Law, president of the Innocence Project of Iowa. Brian, let's get you in here to tell us about how the Iowa chapter was founded.
Thanks, Ben. As Adam acknowledged, having Peter here in Iowa is a treat. He and his co-founder, Barry Scheck, are really pioneers in this area. About 8 years ago, we looked around here in Iowa and realized that there wasn't an active presence in the state in terms of innocence work. There was a growing innocence network led by the Innocence Project in New York, Peter's organization, but there wasn't a dedicated Iowa organization. And so a group of us, lawyers, academics, decided that we wanted to create an organization here in Iowa that could at least provide some efforts toward remedying wrongful convictions and preventing future wrongful convictions. We established the Innocence Project of Iowa in 2007 as an all-volunteer nonprofit. We were able to do this in part because we recognized that some of the issues that were present in other states were not as prevalent here in Iowa. In other states, very often Innocence Projects are the last resort for folks who've been convicted of crimes that they claim to have not committed. They don't have an opportunity for post-conviction representation. When we established our project here in Iowa, we recognized that we are in a state where we have not seen some of these systemic problems. At the same time, we wanted to make sure that we provided a resource for reinvestigation of alleged wrongful convictions and provide some efforts toward improving policies here in the state. And I think, as Adam acknowledged, the fact that we have not had a DNA exoneration doesn't mean that we are not going to have one. And it also doesn't mean that we can't do more here in Iowa to try to improve the integrity of our criminal justice system. And it's very exciting to do that in a way that we feel as though we can achieve common ground with law enforcement, prosecutors, and the like.
Brian Farrell, do you have any sense, this might be a question for Adam as well, how long before we have our first exoneration here in Iowa with the help of the Innocence Project, a year, 5 years?
You know, our project, in conjunction with another partner that we work with, the Midwest Innocence Project, currently has two cases that are going to litigation. It's entirely possible that one of those is going to result in an exoneration. I think that one of the things for us that's very exciting about the Public Defender's new initiative is that it is going to provide the resources to allow for this type of systematic review of a category of cases where we expect that errors were made. And so, as Adam recognized, I think that there is probably a likelihood that out of those 100-plus cases that we are going to see mistakes that led to convictions that should not have been supported by the evidence.
Talking this half hour, this hour, about the Innocence Project, a national organization dedicated to exonerating wrongfully convicted individuals through DNA testing and other means, also reforming the criminal justice system to prevent future injustice. We'll talk about that a little later in the hour. 1-866-780-9100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Is it August in Des Moines? August, I hope I got your name right.
Yes, sir.
Yes, go ahead. What is your connection to this topic?
Well, you know, in 1988, I was convicted of a sexual assault in southern Iowa. And I had the Innocence Project from my cousin with Barry Scheck start getting on my case. And what happened was the county in that time period had destroyed all the evidence that was used to convict me. And so I was never given the chance to prove that I was innocent. And that's another aspect of this is what do we do to preserve the evidence that is used against somebody to convict them?
Mm-hmm. So you spent you served your sentence for sexual assault and were released.
Yes, sir.
You are still seen as convicted.
Yes, sir. Yes, mm-hmm. sir. Yep. And now I'm on the sex offender registry, and I have to go down there 4 times a year for the rest of my life. And I think that we need to set up a process where this stuff is saved. And, you know, with what we've done today with DNA and everything, it's so easy to prove or not prove anything. And I think that our state really needs to get involved with that and say, hey, you know what, we've got to do this the right way, because I served a lot of time.
Right.
You know, I went to school while I was in, and I got an education, and now I'm out. I've been out for about 5 years, and I've been doing extremely well. And I think that just goes to show and prove that when somebody like me knows that, when they know that they're an innocent person, when they get out, they just try to prove it every day.
Mm-hmm. So even though you're out, it's important for you to still, if possible, prove that you're innocent.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And simply by doing the right things, going the right direction. I own two properties. I own vehicles. I work a good job. But it's still tough because of, you know, if it wasn't for the place I work right now, who is understanding, it gives people a second chance, I may not be working and being a productive member of society.
Okay, August, thank you very much from Des Moines. Yeah. Peter Neufeld, what do you have to say to that?
Well, actually, it's a great point that August made. But just before I make the point, August, how long ago was it that you were told the evidence was destroyed in Iowa?
Oh, I'm sorry. August left the line. Sorry, we didn't.
All right. I was going to suggest that August get back in touch with us or the new division that was set up here at the Public Defender Office, because he does sound compelling. And we've had a number of cases where they said the evidence was lost or destroyed, where years later we were able to track it down. And so that could be done there.
As far as evidence, how long do counties' authorities have to keep it, or does it vary from state to state, county to county?
You're exactly right. It's state to state, county to county, city to city. Most places don't have rules. There has been an effort made by the National Institute of Justice through the FBI to set up best practices for what should happen in the states, which would require them to retain biological evidence for the length of the time that a person's in prison, or if they're executed, certainly up until the execution. So you always have that chance to reexamine the evidence. That's certainly an important issue here in Iowa, as it is across the country. It's called evidence preservation. There are lots of new technologies to do it. It's not terribly expensive, but it certainly should be uniform.
Brian Farrell.
I think August's call raises an important point that DNA, as powerful a tool as it is only available in cases where biological evidence is involved. And so there are many categories of crime where biological evidence is not left at the scene, where DNA is not available to prove innocence. And then you have that secondary issue of the preservation of that evidence. In Iowa, if a piece of evidence is admitted at a trial, there are court rules that require that it be preserved throughout the length of that sentence, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee that they're going to be preserved in a condition that's going to allow for future testing.
It could degrade if it needed to be refrigerated, for instance, or frozen.
It certainly could. And let's admit, as evidence preservation is, it's resource intensive. And I think we also need to acknowledge that things can happen outside the control of the laws. And so we have things that can be lost. We had a major flood in Cedar Rapids and here in Iowa City in 2008. The Linn County Courthouse was flooded. So these things do happen where even when evidence is intended to be preserved, it's lost and it's not available for testing.
Peter Neufeld, we have to go to break. But before we do, give us an overview quickly, and we'll talk about this in more detail when we come back, the areas that the Innocence Project is involved in. Exonerating the innocent, one factor.
Second factor is policy, trying to take the lessons we learned from all these innocence cases and use them to change the way that police, prosecutors, judges, defense attorneys, crime labs function so they'll be more scientific, more reliable, and ultimately more just.
Okay. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Peter Neufeld, co-founder of the Innocence Project. That's a national organization dedicated to exonerating wrongfully convicted individuals through DNA testing and other means. Also, as I just mentioned, reforming the criminal justice system to prevent future injustice. Also with us, Brian Farrell, president of the Innocence Project of Iowa. And we've had in our first half hour Adam Gregg, state public defender, with us. Adam Gregg, we're going to say goodbye to you. Thank you very much. And I'm sure we'll be following this story and probably having future conversations about the new wrongful conviction division in the Office of the State Public Defender. Thank you, Adam. And when we come back, we'll talk more about the causes of wrongful convictions. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Peter Neufeld, the co-founder of the Innocence Project, and Brian Farrell. He is the president of the Innocence Project of Iowa. What is the Innocence Project? The national organization dedicated to exonerating wrongfully convicted individuals and reforming the criminal justice system to prevent further injustice. Just on the DNA exonerations alone, to date, 333 exonerations. And this is a bit of audio taken from the Innocence Project website. It's a compilation of wrongfully convicted people with their thoughts about the Innocence Project and where they found themselves behind bars.
The system failed us. you know, tremendously. It failed us.
What happened to this female is wrong, and the real rapist has confessed to attacking her alone. They allowed the victim to be shown mugshots. All the mugshots was in black and white with the exception of my ID. She basically focused on that, my ID picture, and when she saw me in the lineup, within 5 minutes after being shown mugshots, she identified me as her attacker.
It was a bite mark on the victim, and the odontologist said that my teeth was the one that made this bite mark.
There was DNA evidence that excluded us from being, you know, the donors of the semen that was found inside of Katrisa. But I guess because they had these ironclad statements from co-defendants in our case, they still proceeded. You know, we were prosecuted and found guilty.
Okay, a little bit from the Innocence Project's website, a video there if you'd like to go see the entire video. So it's not all about, only about exonerating wrongfully convicted individuals, as we heard there in that clip. It's about finding the individuals who actually committed the crime. Peter Neufeld with us, Brian Farrell as well. Join our conversation. Your questions about wrongful convictions and the work of the Innocence Project, 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Peter, tell us about the categories in which these wrongful convictions find themselves in. What are the ways in which our justice system gets it wrong?
Sure. I mean, maybe the place to start was with the two people who were just speaking on that audio tape. One of them was a young man named Jonathan Barr from Chicago, who at age 15, along with three other men, young teenage men, were wrongly convicted of raping and murdering a 14-year-old girl. The only evidence used to convict them were the confessions that were secured after very, very lengthy coercive interrogations by the police. And they did DNA testing. The DNA testing excluded them all and identified a man in his mid-30s at the time who had just been released on parole as a convicted rapist. And the argument that was offered by the prosecution to explain this is, we still bet on the confessions. How do we know that this 34-year-old man wasn't just a necrophiliac who stumbled upon the naked body and had his way with her? So false confessions are a serious problem, and getting, you know, prosecutors to be more logical and commonsensical in approaching this evidence is something we have to do.
Very quickly, many would say, why would someone make a false confession?
Well, you're absolutely right. It is counterintuitive. And what we found is that certain groups of people are more likely to falsely confess. 25% of the wrongful conviction cases cleared by DNA involve false confessions. A lot of them, like Jonathan Barr, were teenage men. Juveniles are more likely to confess. They're more likely to be coerced. Some people are simply more compliant than others, more leadable. Some people have certain deficits intellectually, or they have mental health issues that makes them more likely. There are lots of reasons. But, you know, when you can prove dispositively that they're innocent and you can identify the real perpetrator who has no contact with them, and you realize that in the confession, there were certain non-public details which the prosecutor relied on during trial to say, this is how we know it's a reliable confession, then you know that those non-public details were actually, perhaps inadvertently, but nevertheless, fed to the innocent suspect during the interrogation to make the confession seem more reliable.
Mm-hmm. The other reasons people are wrongly convicted?
Well, another reason we've seen in a lot of these cases is misidentification. The man who you heard on the tape, Marvin Anderson, had never been arrested in his life. He was the star of the baseball team in Hanover, Virginia. And he was African-American, and it was a young white gal who was abducted on her way home from the mall, and she was raped. And the perpetrator said, you ain't so special. I've had me white girls before. So they went to the sheriff, and they asked the sheriff, do you know any interracial relationships? And he said, the only one I know is Marvin Anderson. But since Marvin Anderson had never been arrested, they went to his place of employment. They got a color employment ID card and put that in a photo array with six black and white mugshots. And, of course, she identified the color ID card. The irony there is that ultimately when the DNA testing was done years later and he was exonerated, it matched one of the men who was actually in that photo spread, okay, who had a prior, two priors for rape. But even though he was in the photo array, he wasn't picked out because of the suggestive identification procedures utilized to pick Marvin Anderson.
Let's go to our phones, 1-866-780-9100, talking about the Innocence Project. Richard is with us in Des Moines, 1-866-780-9100. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
I have a question, too, just about DNA for your guest. Is that how foolproof or how 100% is it? And the reason I ask this is I've had conversations, arguments with people who are for the death penalty, and they'll make the argument, well, since we now have DNA, there no mistakes can ever be made. And I'd like to ask your guest to comment on that. And also, how much can DNA possibly be compromised, you know, by the police in order to arrest the person you want to?
Okay. Thank you very much, Richard in Des Moines. Peter.
Sure, Richard. It's a very good question. First of all, what you have to appreciate is that DNA evidence only exists in a very small minority of crimes. That's why there's such a disparity between the 330 exonerations that we've identified and the 1,600 that the University of Michigan has identified with non-DNA. According to the directors of major crime laboratories, only about 5 to 10% of all the cases that they process in the crime laboratory involve biological evidence. So therefore, if there's a drive-by shooting, there's no blood splattered on the shooter. If there's a robbery of a pocketbook, there's no semen left behind. So all the causes of wrongful conviction have to be dealt with, have to be addressed and fixed. Otherwise, you will continue to have many wrongful convictions and wrongful executions because there's simply no biology involved in the prosecution. Secondly, even DNA can sometimes get it wrong. The whole notion that something is foolproof means that any fool can do it. And when you're dealing with any activity that involves human beings, there's always the risk that something can go wrong. Having said that, DNA testing is certainly much more reliable, much more scientific and robust than all the other forensic disciplines that they've been using for the last 50 years to get convictions.
Brian Farrell, let me ask you about the Innocence Project of Iowa. You are the president of the local chapter of the Innocence Project. I imagine, perhaps first to Peter here, Iowa's, I imagine from state to state, the wrongful conviction rate is different. Have you found that out with these hundreds of exonerations yet?
Well, I mean, there is no rate. Okay?
I mean the degree to which states do better or worse with wrongful in getting the fewest number of wrongful convictions.
Well, I don't believe that states do better or worse. I think it has to do with whether you have a concerted effort in the defense bar and among people who care about innocence issues, you know, digging up all the evidence, pounding the pavement, talking to witnesses. I'll give you an example. 2 years ago, I tried to get DNA testing in a case in Alabama, and we had not had a single exoneration in Alabama. And the attorney general went on TV and said, the reason we haven't had an exoneration in Alabama is because we have the best criminal justice system in the country. And that's silly. We just don't have a group of lawyers there doing that work. I think now with this alliance between the Iowa Innocence Project and the State Public Defender of Iowa, you're going to start seeing these cases percolate throughout the state in the coming years.
Okay, Brian Farrell, let me ask you the question. why has Iowa had no exonerations based on DNA evidence?
You know, I think that Peter's point is valid, that there hasn't been the concerted effort with substantial resources to look at cases systematically. At the same time, you know, I do think that we are somewhat fortunate to be in a state, you know, we have a, I think, a well-developed judiciary. I think we have conscientious prosecutors and law enforcement officials who generally want to get it right. So perhaps some of the more egregious situations that have been seen elsewhere, we don't see here. I think we're also fortunate to have a state crime lab that is very science-based, Adam mentioned this earlier. They are somewhat autonomous. They don't view themselves as part of law enforcement. And I think small factors like that can potentially reduce the likelihood that you're going to see these repeated egregious situations. At the same time, certainly the potential for error is there. And to think that we have never or that we could never get it wrong in Iowa, I think is somewhat silly.
Well, Ben, this is Adam. You know, I do have some numbers from some of our neighboring states. For example, there have been 45 exonerations in Illinois, 9 in Missouri, 6 in Nebraska, mm-hmm. 7 in Wisconsin, 5 in Michigan. So, you know, obviously Illinois is the real outlier there with 45 exonerations. But what we're doing here is putting together a systemic process where we can review these cases and get to the right result.
Let's go to Tom in Cedar Rapids. Tom dialed 1-866-780-9100, wrapping up the hour, talking about the Innocence Project, an organization nationally dedicated to exonerating wrongfully convicted individuals and reforming criminal justice in our country to prevent some future injustices. An alliance is what Peter Neufeld termed it, an alliance with the Office of the State Public Defender. You just heard Adam Gregg there, State Public Defender. Let's go to Tom. Tom in Cedar Rapids, what do you have to chip in?
Hi. I have two questions. The first is, has anybody tracked what happens to people that have been proved innocent after they're released? Are they offered reimbursement? Are they offered education? Does society support them in, after they're released? And also, what happens to the prosecution teams if there is a wrongful conviction against them? Are they disciplined? Is it possible that they're charged with a crime?
Okay, Tom.
What happens?
Great. Two great questions. We're also on my list. We've got so many facets to talk about here. Peter, talk about that. What happens after they are released, the wrongfully convicted individuals?
Well, fewer than half the states in the country have compensation statutes for the wrongfully convicted. Fortunately, Iowa is one of the states that does have that, as long as the exoneree didn't plead guilty. We've had a number of cases, though, where people have in fact pled guilty who were stone cold innocent, because the alternative was just too scary. So that would be one nice thing to fix if we could. With respect to the prosecution team, criminally, I've only seen one prosecutor who deliberately, maliciously withheld exculpatory evidence, prosecuted, convicted, and forced to spend about 10 days in jail. Despite the fact that the innocent person spent more than two decades in prison for a crime he didn't commit. And what you need to know is that even if you wanted to sue the prosecutor who deliberately withheld that evidence that would have set you free 20 years ago, there is a doctrine in this country called absolute immunity for prosecutors, which means they can't be sued. So it's very, very difficult to hold a prosecution team or any member of it accountable.
Mm-hmm. Could they sue civilly for compensation that way in the states that don't grant it through the statutes?
You could. The challenge with suing civilly under the federal law are multiple. One is that, you know, with the passage of time, it's very difficult to find the witnesses and the evidence 20 or 25 years later, not the evidence of innocence, but the evidence of wrongdoing. Police also enjoy what's called qualified immunity. So it's a much higher bar to reach than if you're suing a civilian. And it's there are just a number of burdens. There are statutes of limitation that say, well, you should have sued within 3 years of the conviction. But obviously, for most of these people, you would lose the case unless and until you've been exonerated. So there are all these catch-22s that make it difficult, which is why you want a statute like the one you have in Iowa, where you simply say if the person's innocent and didn't do anything to bring about his conviction, then we as a state have a moral obligation to try and give these people some amount of money to help them restart their lives.
Brian Farrell of the Innocence Project of Iowa, when we talk about reforms so that future injustices are prevented to the greatest degree. What's going on here in Iowa? What do you expect to change? Certainly this step forward by the governor to create this new wrongful conviction division is a step in the right direction. What else?
It is. And I think it's important, as Peter pointed out earlier, that these 330 DNA exonerations have given us case studies of what's gone wrong in the criminal system. And we've been able to then look at these, apply science. Social scientists have done research to figure out what's going wrong, why did it go wrong, how do we improve the system going forward. And I think that's been very important, research by people like Gary Wells at Iowa State University looking at eyewitness misidentification, that we don't just say the eyewitness got it wrong, but we use that as a jumping off point to try to understand why did the eyewitness get it wrong. Why does a person give a false confession, something that I think most of us seem to go against common sense? When we can understand that, we can start to understand what we can do to prevent those things happening in the future. Things such as video recording custodial interrogations, which gives us a record of an interrogation and allows us to identify after the fact if a false confession occurred, if law enforcement was intentionally or unintentionally feeding a suspect inside facts about a crime. It allows us to construct photo lineups in a way that tries to minimize bias, minimizes the potential for the types of errors that Peter mentioned earlier, where you have a clearly identified suspect. And so we're able to take those reform ideas and try to implement them in policy. Here in Iowa, the governor acknowledged yesterday the leadership that we've seen from some of our law enforcement agencies in terms of best practices for eyewitness identification procedures. Our Department of Public Safety has a wonderful policy in terms of recording custodial interrogations, but they're not uniform. They're not necessarily statewide. There are agencies that don't have written policies. There are agencies where this is not common practice. There are agencies where all of this is left to discretion. And so it's important for us to work on things such as implementation of best practices in eyewitness identification, ensuring that custodial interrogations are video recorded in every investigation statewide. We've had progress, for example, in arson investigations, an issue that was identified several years ago. A number of other areas that we see as opportunities to improve our system going forward.
Mm-hmm. Brian Farrell,
Ben, this is Adam.
We have a couple minutes left. Yeah, go ahead, Peter. Or Adam, yes.
Yes. Well, the broader point I wanted to make is the potential impact on racial disparities in our criminal justice system. You know, there's been a lot of conversation recently about the significant disparities in our system. The governor put together a working group to look at some policy reforms with an eye especially towards helping resolve some of those racial disparities. Again, turning to those 330 DNA exonerations, 70% of those involve defendants who are minorities. So I think the creation of this division could have an impact in that regard. Now, our review isn't going to be focused solely on minority applicants for post-conviction relief, but chances are pretty high that a successful case could involve a minority.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have just over a minute left. Peter Neufeld, let me give that minute to you and ask you, going forward, when you talk about criminal justice reform, what are the major challenges you face in the Innocence Project?
Well, it used to be a major challenge to get people in law enforcement and prosecutorial services on board. But once we began to identify the real perpetrator and the fact that they were committing other violent crimes and it became a matter of public safety, it made it much easier to get a consensus on a lot of these reforms. So we're getting that at the state level, and that's a wonderful thing. It's been more difficult to get the needed reforms in the area of forensic science because there are so many different crime laboratories around the country where, unfortunately, for a lot of the older people in those laboratories, it's the whole phenomena of old dogs not wanting to learn new tricks. And so there's been resistance to doing things in a more scientifically rigorous way. And it's going to take a little bit more time to change that culture.
Okay. Let's use the last few seconds. Brian, perhaps I can turn to you. People who want more information about the Innocence Project of Iowa, perhaps even people, because I know they contact you in great numbers, Peter Neufeld. How do people contact you about a case potentially, Brian?
We're in the process of creating a unified intake process with the Public Defender's Office, with the Midwest Innocence Project. So folks can go to our website, iowainnocence.org, or to themip.org, which is the website of the Midwest Innocence Project, and that's where they'll find information on requesting assistance.
You can also find it at the State Public Defender's website, spd.iowa.gov, or send an email to exonerate@spd.state.ia.us.
Okay. Adam, Greg, thank you very much. State Public Defender Brian Farrell, president of the Innocence Project of Iowa, and Peter Neufeld, the co-founder of the Innocence Project nationwide. Peter, it's been great to have you in our studio. Brian, thank you as well. And Adam, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. In Des Moines, help from John Pemble as well. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.